Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, one and all, to the Alan Nathan Show, the global nerve center for militant moderation, where we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Please be sure to visit our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our showtimes. Well, there is a lot going on in the world, and to be honest, not much of it is very good. I have to say, even more than normal news days, where, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, and bad news tends to fill the headlines, it's not looking good out there pretty much anywhere. You got Russia flying drones over Poland, and NATO forces shooting them down, which is another nice little step towards World War III, for those keeping score at home. The French government has collapsed. It's chaos in the streets down there. They're setting fires down in Nepal, which you probably don't give a lot of thought to, but it's kind of important because that's becoming a major uprising that looks ready to upend their entire system of government. And it all got started because of social media censorship. The government of Nepal decided to shut down most of the big social media platforms, and the Nepalese youth were having none of it. And it wound up escalating into quite the brouhaha over there in Nepal. Their prime minister resigned. Everything's getting shaky. I think that, by the way, even if you don't really know that much about Nepal, and it's kind of out of the way, I do think that is part of a bigger global story to be told about freedom of speech, about the flow of information. And I think about a younger generation that in many ways is proving in many countries to be surprisingly conservative, or libertarian, if you prefer. They're surprisingly, considering what everybody thinks of college campus education and attitudes these days, a lot of young people are becoming very interested in the bedrock functions of liberal democracy, such as free speech, without which you can't have a liberal democracy. And even in Nepal, where they're very online over there, the Nepalese youth are very fond of their social media. And when the government tried to shut it down, all hell broke loose. So interesting story. But the story that is all-consuming at this point, that has everybody's attention laser-focused on it, is, of course, the Charlotte train stabbing, which has become the biggest story in the country in no small part because the media tried to suppress it. This is one of the most despicable, depraved examples of partisan ideological media, the Democrat Party's media operations, trying to smother this story and kill it and prevent anyone from knowing about it, because it was such a gigantic threat to preferred left-wing narratives and the Democrat Party. And consider the context. This happens, this terrible, heartless murder happens and then becomes big public knowledge a couple of weeks later, right at the moment where the left is busy trying to make Donald Trump look like the bad guy because he's trying to crack down on crime in the streets. You know, so Trump is out there sending the National Guard to Chicago to stop all the killing. Democrat cities running red with blood, as President Trump correctly pointed out yesterday. 24 of the 25 deadliest cities in the country are run by Democrats. It is not a coincidence. It is their policies that cause this, that exacerbate it. And right at the moment that all that's happening, and the left is frantically trying to spin up some kind of a storyline where Trump's the bad guy for wanting to keep people safe and wanting law and order, here comes this horrifying, insanely brutal videotaped murder on board a train in Charlotte of this innocent young woman by this thug. And it's the last thing the Democrat Party thought you needed to see, so they told their media not to report on it, and they didn't. But it was people like me and people like Alan and independent media once again riding to the rescue, once again citizen journalism, alternative journalism, stepping up and doing the job the mainstream press simply refuses to do. Not just because they're incompetent, although they frequently are, but because they're ideologically polarized and completely enthralled to one political party. And when a story reflects badly on the Democrat Party, the media just will try to ignore it to death. They just hope it goes away. And nobody notices. Didn't work in the case of the Charlotte stabbing.
And of course, one reason it didn't work is that the video was suddenly everywhere. And it's just horrifying beyond description, especially if you watch the whole thing. It will shake you to your very core watching this poor girl being killed on this train for no reason, for absolutely no reason. She was just sitting there. She wasn't bothering the guy. She was just sitting there. And this guy, DeCarlos Brown Jr., is the name of the killer. You're not supposed to know that name. Her name was Irina Zarutska, a 23-year-old from Ukraine. And you're not supposed to know her name. The Democrat Party ordered its media not to tell you their names. You're not supposed to know any of this happened. And the media dutifully complied. To a man and woman, absolutely zero stories in mainstream press about any of this until their hand was forced by the likes of Breitbart News and the Alan Nathan Show and all the rest of us on social media that saw the video and passed it around and started talking about this. And now they have to talk about it. And they hate it. President Trump did a videotape message from the White House yesterday, and he held up pictures of Irina Zarutska and DeCarlos Brown Jr. and of the moment of the killing, and he said their names. And he did that precisely because he knew that would force the media to reveal all of this to you and discuss it. This is highly relevant. It is not a one-off. It's not a bizarre, unheard-of situation. It's not a murder in paradise, that came out of nowhere. This is daily life in Democrat-run cities. This stuff happens all the time to people, and you're not supposed to know about it or remark upon it. Quite frequently, the victims of this crime are Black because a lot of them live in those cities, and the Democrats don't care. Black lives don't actually matter to them. Politics, power, money matters to the Democrat Party. They don't care about Black lives. So when Black people are murdered in appalling numbers in places like Chicago and crime-infested cities, they don't care. All of a sudden, Black lives don't mean a damn if it would be inconvenient to the Democrat Party. So this stuff is happening all the time, and the attempt to suppress the story made the story go nuclear as people began realizing how horrifying this was. And of course, if it had been a different victim and perpetrator, let's say if a young Black woman had been stabbed by a crazed white supremacist on a train, the movie would probably be out already. I mean, they would be the most famous people on earth. The coverage would be 24/7, 365. Everybody knows it. You don't even have to say it anymore. It's not even a cliche. It's just everybody knows. The media treats stories that are useful to the left in a very different way than it treats stories that are harmful to left-wing narratives. There's a name for what happened with this story, and if you don't know the name or the history behind it, it's kind of funny. It's called the Streisand effect. And yes, it's named after that Streisand, Barbra Streisand. And the reason this term was coined is because many years ago, there was a story Barbra Streisand didn't like about her beach house in Malibu. And people were passing around pictures of her lavish estate in Malibu, and she didn't like that. So she started yelling at people and threatening them and telling them not to show those pictures. And that only intensified interest in what otherwise might have been a relatively minor story. And before you know it, she had the most famous house in the country. And that came to be known as the Streisand effect. Because if you try to suppress a story beyond a certain point, when your efforts become too intense, people start wondering, why are you screaming in my face and telling me not to care about this? And they start caring. And that was definitely something that happened with Charlotte. Another big reason that this is such a huge story, besides the timing and the media efforts to suppress it, is that this is so clearly a failure of government. I mean, this is not a failure of the police and the scurrilous Democratic mayor and governor, these useless public officials. They tried to blame the police. They said if the police did a better job, if we had more police officers, they didn't even really blame them. They just did what Democrats always do and say, hey, give us more money and maybe we'll hire more cops and fewer people will die. And the police, the Fraternal Order of Police down there in Charlotte just came out swinging. How dare you blame this on us? We pleaded with you to shut down these revolving doors for violent offenders. We're sick and tired of arresting the same guy 14 times. This guy, DeCarlos Brown Jr., has been arrested and the Democrat prosecutors let him back on the street. This is a 100% Democrat Party bloodbath. They own this. It's them. It's their policies. It's their whole approach on crime. And as an example of that ideology, we turn to Van Jones. I don't know if you remember Van Jones. He was a big guy in the Obama administration, a big Democrat Party guy. And now he's a CNN analyst. He got magically turned into a commentator or something on CNN. And Van Jones was talking about this, and he zeroed in on the real victim on the Charlotte train. Would you like to guess who he thinks the real victim is? Yes, DeCarlos Brown Jr., the killer, is the real victim. Van Jones said, you know, it's horrible crime and everything, you know, too bad about all that. But the man was hurting, he says. And the problem is that our society doesn't know how to deal with a man who's hurting like DeCarlos Brown Jr. was hurting. And I got to tell you, Mr. Jones, that's not going to fly. And the more you guys turn to that tired rhetoric that the criminal's the real victim and society is the real killer and your usual garbage, the closer you're coming to provoking what I think could be an uprising on the American people, a revolution against the society you've built. So I think Democrats, lefties, you better get your heads on straight real quick and start coming to terms with what happened in Charlotte and why it's important. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
This summer's heat waves brought higher UV indexes across the country, and that's cause for concern. Dr. Raza Bukhari, CEO of Medicus Pharma, explains.
90% of non-melanoma skin cancers are related to exposure to ultraviolet radiation from the sun.
Even with regular use of sunscreen, high UV rays can cause significant damage. That's why getting a professional skin check could save your life. And new treatments on the horizon are poised to revolutionize the way skin cancer is treated.
We are currently in phase 2 trials of a non-invasive skin cancer treatment called SkinJet. This small microneedle transdermal patch provides a relatively painless, cost-effective treatment for basal cell skin cancer. So far, in our interim analysis, more than 60% of patients achieved complete clinical clearance.
For more, visit medicuspharma.com.
Summer's easy mornings are behind us, and now it's back to the school day rush. Parents know the scramble all too well, trying to get everyone out the door while finding something quick, tasty, and reliable to take on the go. That's where Mott's soft-baked, apple-filled bars come in. Unlike crumbly snacks that leave a mess in the car or all over the kitchen, these apple-filled bars bring soft-baked goodness and easy cleanup for active families with busy back-to-school routines. Made with ingredients parents can feel good about, like real fruit and whole wheat flour. Mott's soft-baked apple-filled bars come in delicious kid-approved flavors like apple, strawberry, and blueberry. Whether it's breakfast, part of a school lunch, or just an afternoon bite, they're a snack the whole family will love. Mott's soft-baked apple-filled bars are available now at retailers nationwide. To learn more or to find them near you, visit Mott's.com. All three flavors of Mott's soft-baked apple-filled bars are made with apple puree. See packaging for complete list of ingredients, not intended to replace fruit in the diet.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie. This is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. It's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. Last week, China held a big victory parade to celebrate victory in World War II and to peddle China's version of how World War II was won. Spoiler alert, Communist China's version is not what actually happened, but they're insisting on that becoming the known history. And they also use this parade as a chance to solidify their alliances with the likes of Vladimir Putin in Russia and Kim Jong-un, the dictator of North Korea. So at the parade, Xi Jinping, the dictator of China, is walking along with Putin and Kim Jong-un, and him and Putin get into a conversation about using organ transplants to extend their lives. And the upshot of the conversation was basically that they're both 70 years old or 72, and that's nothing because you can live a long time with transplanted organs now. And that is pretty chilling considering China's grievous history of organ harvesting. In China, organ transplants are not always voluntary or posthumous. So this is a very unsettling conversation they had, and China has decided it looks really bad for them, so they're ordering foreign news organizations to take down the video of this hot mic moment. Here with us to talk about it is Richard Lyons, Middle East historian, a third-generation printer-screenwriter, and author of The DNA of Democracy and Shadows of the Acropolis. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Thank you, John.
When I saw this conversation for the first time, and my eyes popped out when I saw the translation of it, my first thought is that Xi Jinping talking about using organ transplants to live to be 150 is like Dracula saying you can live to be 600 on the right liquid diet, because organ harvesting is a big problem in China.
Well, yes, it is, and it's the prerogative of a tyrant. And, tyrants always awaken too late to the fact that they can't take it all with them. So as much as they might hope, even with organ transplants, they're not going to live forever.
There was some interesting subtext to this particular conversation, because Xi Jinping himself is not really that obsessed in a public way with longevity. He doesn't dye his hair, unlike most Chinese leaders. He lets the gray show. He isn't really, by and large, one of these guys that's obsessed with making himself younger. But Vladimir Putin is. And he spent a huge amount of effort forcing Russian doctors and clinics to study longevity treatments to extend his life. So there's a little difference between the way the two of them approach this.
Yeah, and it is the syndrome of tyranny that they think they're above normal human nature.
Yeah, human nature and human justice, I guess, or even divine justice.
Well, Putin is remarkable by the number of persons whose lives he ended early. Now he seeks to extend his own. So the very definition of a tyrant.
Yeah, one of the leading causes of death in Russia right now is disagreeing with Vladimir Putin and then falling out of a window.
Yes, and it has been for decades. I mean, how long has this guy been in power? And since he came to power, it's been his actions are very clear with regard to persons that don't agree with him.
Now, this conversation between Xi and Putin was not supposed to be for the public. They were just walking down the red carpet chatting. And apparently Chinese state television, their own state media, inadvertently recorded and broadcast this, which I'm sure got a few people in a lot of trouble over at Chinese state TV headquarters. And now China is trying to force foreign news organizations like Reuters to stop showing the video because it's embarrassing.
Well, good luck with that. I don't know. Reuters is pretty left wing, but I don't think China will get away with that.
It's interesting that they would think they could try, because actually at the top of the hour in my opening monologue, I was talking about the fabled Streisand effect, which is when more people pay attention to a story after you try to suppress it. And you have to think the Chinese would know their odds of getting foreign media to obey their censorship commands are pretty low. And by even trying, they're just drawing more attention to the story.
Yeah, it's a boomerang effect, really. Trying to put it away and it comes back and hits you in the head. So,
and, of course, it gets people wondering, like, why don't they want me to see this video? What's so horrible about this? And then they start talking.
Yeah, and I wonder what the real statistics are, John, as to how many people unwillingly are put to surgery and have their organs removed in China.
There have been quite a few undercover reports, exposés, investigative reports over the years. Chinese prisoners being harvested for organs is a very real thing. And it's a real horror in China that really the Chinese, I'm sure that's one reason they're upset about this, because if they were level-headed about it all, they would say Xi really doesn't come off too badly in this conversation, all things considered. Putin's the one that looks like he's obsessed with organ transplants. But they felt like they just had to suppress this because it's not good for them. And I think that's the reason why. They know organ harvesting is a big scandal, and they don't want people talking about it.
Yeah, and China is a nation of slaves. And, you know, what's the ultimate slavery is having your body invaded, I would think. And of course, the organs would go to party members, right? So that shows the huge separation in their society.
That is a big problem in China that is not remarked on much outside of it. A lot of Chinese people are getting kind of restless about how party elites get all kinds of benefits and riches and comforts that nobody else gets. And of course, if you criticize them for it, they throw you in jail or kill you. So it's not like you can just go running around and writing op-eds about it. But it's still bubbling to the surface. And China's had a surprising number of large public demonstrations lately from people who are basically upset about being treated poorly by their government.
Well, and this, you know, this is recent. They used to be universally poor in China. Even the party members were poor. And now that they've gotten this wealth at our expense, really over the past 30, 40 years since Bill Clinton was in office, now there's a separation in society and they're seeing it. It's in front of their face. And this story is just it's the epitome of the separation in their society between a party in power, a tyrannical party run by a few and one man, and the rest of the country, a billion restless people.
Now, China is very obviously putting together a new world order that they would dominate. And this military parade was part of that effort. The conference they had right before that was a big part of it. And in China's new world order, it's an axis of authoritarianism. It's China, it's Putin, it's Kim Jong-un's North Korea.
Yes.
And they're trying to get India to join up. They're trying to woo India to become part of this new axis of authoritarianism. And the Indians have at least been willing to talk to them about it. How great of a threat is that to the post-war international order? Do they really have the moxie and the money and the muscle to put together an alternative hegemonic power?
There's always going to be one in the world, isn't there, John? There's always a counterpoise in the world. You know, it was the Axis in Europe before World War II, and now this is a new Axis. And the problem with that is that their authoritarianism is not attractive. When India has a choice between doing business with Britain and the United States, Canada, Australia, and these sorts of countries, or doing business with China, I think their choice is pretty clear.
You'd like to hope so. You certainly hope we can hold them on board. China's sales pitch to the authoritarian regimes of the world has been constant for decades now, and people like me have been warning about it. They go to authoritarian governments, and they say, hey, sign up with us, because we will never hassle you about human rights. We're never going to give you a hard time about what you do to protesters and dissidents in your country. As long as you keep your agreements to China and the money shows up on time and the check's clear, we don't care what you do to your own people. That's a pretty seductive message to authoritarian regimes, isn't it?
People like Maduro in Venezuela, very attractive.
A lot of other Latin American dictators. That is a great point, because that is a big concern right now, is the spread of Chinese influence through Latin America. And that's a big part of the reason why the Chinese say they'll let you alone to conduct your affairs in peace compared to those meddling Westerners. Richard Ryans, Middle East historian, third generation printer screenwriter, and author of The DNA of Democracy and The Shadows of Acropolis. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward,
sitting
in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Tilly Ramsey, daughter of celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay, is ready to step out of her father's shadow into her own culinary adventures with the new series Dish It Out, premiering Friday, September 5th on Prime Video. A passionate foodie and aspiring chef, Tilly celebrates online trends and family recipes, alongside some surprise visitors in the kitchen, including her parents Gordon and Tana Ramsay, Gillian Jacobs, Frankie Grande, and many more. In each episode, Tilly receives a mystery box from chefs, influencers, and home cooks from around the world, and uses the ingredients to cook a dish for a studio guest. Tilly Ramsey.
I've sat next to my father in the kitchen for my entire life and wanted to become a chef for as long as I can remember. Now that I've graduated culinary school, I'm ready to sharpen my skills and create exciting new dishes for my guests, and will be sure to have plenty of fun along the way.
Don't miss Dish It Out starting this Friday, September 5th, only on Prime Video.
Circle K is expanding its membership rewards program, Inner Circle, throughout the Lone Star State beginning on Wednesday, September 3rd. Free to join, customers can now become members to get fuel discounts, drink deals, and more. To celebrate, Circle K is hosting a Fuel Day pop-up on Thursday, September 4th. Customers can get 40 cents off per gallon of fuel from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. local time. Inner Circle members will have early access starting at 7 a.m. Members can enter their phone number at the pump or inside at checkout to access the savings. First-time members can save 25 cents per gallon of fuel on their first five fill-ups and have access to discounted drinks. Members also get personalized offers and exclusive deals throughout the year. Sign up at CircleK.com/inner-circle or enter your mobile number at checkout to enroll via text. Learn more about the Fuel Day on Thursday, September 4th at CircleK.com/TX-Fuel-Day.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Cool. Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay. Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, National Security Editor for Breitbart News. Israel took a bold step yesterday by attacking Hamas leadership, not in Gaza, but in Qatar, where the The leaders of Hamas have been living in luxury as guests of the Qatari government ever since the atrocities of October 7th, and even in some cases before that. It was a big step for Israel. It has drawn some international condemnation as a hostile act towards the state of Qatar, with whom they are not actually at war at the moment. But of course, some people say if that's where the leaders of Hamas are, then Israel needs to go get them. So big controversy in foreign policy circles right now. President Trump said he is not pleased that the Israelis went ahead with this strike. So for the record, he doesn't think it was a good idea. Here with us to talk about it is Jeff Gilson, former speechwriter for Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher and author of Maggie's Hammer, an investigation into covert power networks that transcend borders and party lines. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
I'm glad to be here. Happy that special guests made the introduction.
Well, what do you make of this Israeli action in Qatar? It was clearly a major escalation in Israel's war against Hamas, but according to Israel, a necessary one, because the Qataris were sheltering these Hamas leaders and there was no other way to get them.
John, I think, first of all, I would say this. Let's not forget that every time people are killed, it's a tragedy. Violence, I'm not in support of violence anywhere. Then we take a step back from that and look at the brutal real politic of the situation. And the big picture, as I see it, it's my personal opinion, is this. Donald Trump, President Trump, is about business. It's about business and America. And he looks, in my view, at the Middle East and what he wants and Crown Prince Mohammed of Saudi Arabia wants and Israel wants. They're the power players. They want a Middle East economic community. That's what the Abraham Accords were all about. And however inhumane it may be to say this, Palestinian Arabs, Gaza, Iran, and its surrogates, Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthi rebels, they're obstacles to achieving that Middle East economic community. And therefore, Israel acting as a surrogate of the United States is pretty much going to do whatever it can to remove those obstacles. And you may also know that a couple of weeks ago, an Israeli strike took out the Houthi prime minister. So this is part and parcel of undertakings by Israel against Palestinian Arabs and Hamas in Gaza, against Hezbollah in Lebanon, against the Houthi rebels in Yemen. And I would say this, regardless of what President Trump writes on Truth Social, these strikes would not have taken place without the knowledge and support, at least covertly, of Saudi Arabia and the United States.
It's interesting you should bring up the Abraham Accords, because in the years since the October 7th attacks, it's come out that one of the major reasons Hamas launched that attack on Israeli civilians was because the Abraham Accords were worrying them. They didn't like the way the Middle East was realigning. They thought the Palestinian cause was being left out by this new outreach to Israel that many countries are making. And they thought that by doing what they did, they could create the result that did in fact occur, that this war began and that a lot of hard feelings would then turn against Israel and it would realign the Middle East away from that Abraham Accords peace urge. So from that perspective, no matter what else has happened to Hamas, it seems like they accomplished their most immediate objective so far.
Well, again, to be rather brutal with my real politic, and I'm sorry for it, I think you had it half right there. Other people have it half right. I think Hamas saw the walls closing in on them. And I think that their October the 7th attack was a last-minute gasp attack, very much in the tradition of the Islamic religion and paradise and heaven and martyrdom and so on. I don't think they were trying to achieve anything so much as they were trying to rewrite the history books for their children. This was a last-gasp martyrdom attack on Israel. We knew what was going to happen, but we wanted to know, you to know, we haven't forgotten you. I don't think they expected to achieve any success, but you're absolutely right. I think they see the writing on the wall, as most people of real politics do. The Palestinian Arabs, and let me say, I think this is tragic for them as a people, not for their leaders who I don't much care for, but for a people it's tragic. They have been abandoned by everyone. They are the true tragedy of the Middle East. But the name of the game for the power players is business.
Unfortunately, the Palestinians have been abandoned by much of the Middle East and the world that could help them, but they have not been abandoned by the people that have brainwashed them and maddened them with bloodlust and turned them into the people that they've become, and that presents a problem. It was done very deliberately for exactly the reason that we're seeing today, that because all of the Palestinian people have been corrupted into a murder state, it becomes impossible to hit the terrorists without the civilians getting in the mix, and then all of a sudden Israel's being raked over the coals for killing civilians. That was a very deliberate strategy on the part of the people who did that to the Palestinians.
That, John, that is absolutely true. There's been a lot of nonsense spoken about this, but the fact of the matter is the Hamas leaders, and once again, this reminds your listeners, the Hamas leaders who are comfortably sitting hundreds of miles away in five-star hotels in Qatar, the Hamas leaders put their command and control centers under areas of heavy residential population, hospitals, and the like. This is not the action of leaders who care about their people.
That very, very true. There's an interesting inversion here of what I think was the early 2000s idea of the decapitation strike. For a while in the 90s and 2000s, people started thinking that if you could just get the leaders of a terrorist organization or a hostile state, take them out, then you could neutralize the threat. This is kind of the reverse of that. There was a long war that was fought in every other way in Gaza, you know, a more or less conventional war. And then the Israelis started taking out the leadership of the Houthis, of Hamas, and making them suffer. And I think the idea here is not a fantastical belief that killing the leaders will instantly end the conflict, but rather it's very important to send a message to the leaders, right up to those Hamas guys sitting in five-star hotels in Qatar, that you aren't going to survive this. You don't get to walk away from this with money in your pockets and live a comfortable life after unleashing horror on everybody else. You're in this fight.
I think it may be a little bit more immediate than that. All the talk is that a ceasefire deal is very close, but again, the Hamas leaders are off in Qatar, they're safe, they're not on the front line. What the IDF did, apparently with the help of Shin Bet on the ground, was bring the front line to the Hamas leaders. But John, here is an interesting thing. If you read into the detail, not one Hamas leader was actually killed. I think this was a very surgical strike. Some security guards got killed, and obviously that's tragic, but it wasn't the leaders. So people have been saying, why would you strike the Hamas negotiating team? The Hamas negotiating team is still in place, but now it's rattled.
Well, one would hope so, because unfortunately the Hamas negotiating team hasn't been doing a whole lot of real negotiating. They tend to just keep repeating the same maximalist demands over and over again, and they're counting on the world community to ride to their rescue, like with the silly stunt they're going to pull at the UN where they unilaterally declare a Palestinian state to essentially reward the terrorists, which Hamas thinks is going to be the greatest victory they've ever scored if they can get the Europeans to go through with that. But in their actual negotiations, from what we know of them, Hamas almost never offers any meaningful concessions at all. They just stick to the same line over and over again.
Well, I agree there, John. And I think at the end of the day, as I say, Donald Trump and Saudi Arabia, I'm pretty sure they knew the strike was taking place. The strike appears not to have taken out leaders. It appears simply to have been an occasion to rattle them. And I suspect now that we will see more activity behind the scenes from Saudi Arabia and Qatar, actually, and Donald Trump to get Hamas finally to agree to a ceasefire and to a long-term peace, which will almost certainly not include their governance.
There was an element of truth to the Hamas analysis that the Abraham Accords process was marginalizing them, because that was pretty palpable among some of the countries negotiating to be part of the Accords. They were just sick and tired of their whole history, their whole future, being mortgaged to the sacred Palestinian cause, about which they don't actually care all that much. They just felt like they had to keep making moves on their behalf. And you could tell a lot of these Arab leaders really just wanted the Palestinian thing to go away so they could get on with building something more in line with their hopes and goals and agenda. And now to this day, just the other day, we had the Egyptians saying, no, we're not going to take any Palestinians. We're not going to feed you guys. You know, leave us alone. Everybody claims in the Arab world that the Palestinians are their brothers and they love them. But when it comes time to actually do anything meaningful for them, they're all AWOL.
John, you're absolutely right. And I'll leave you with this thought. If you actually take a look at the border wall that the Egyptians have built between Gaza and Egypt to stop the Palestinians coming over, it's like a 3 or 4 layer border wall. It makes the southern border wall in the United States look like a white picket fence. The Arab nations have had enough of the Palestinian Arabs and their radical leaders, and they want to get on and build a Middle East economic community.
Is there, do you see a potential solution to this that the Arab leaders might get behind that might be constructive? Sake of argument, let's say Hamas finally throws in the towel and the war comes to an end. Do you see a productive future for the Palestinians in any of these scenarios?
No. I see a productive solution between Arab nations and Israel. The Palestinian Arabs will get what they're given.
Jeff Gilson, former speechwriter for Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher and author of Maggie's Hammer, an investigation into covert power networks that transcend borders and party lines. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
We have an active government relations program. They're very much involved in legislative work to not only improve the ADA, but to strengthen enforcement. The bottom line is a law with no enforcement is no law at all. But it's not just about legislative work. It's really just about public education. We want the general public, we want policymakers, we want business owners to understand that they have a role in knocking down barriers and making the world more accessible. We have an active campaign going on right now. Barriers still exist. If you go to our website, pva.org, you can find information about various types of barriers that are out there through our PSAs. We have a petition that we want to send to the United States Congress that calls for improved enforcement of the ADA. And ultimately, we just want to get everyone in the game. We want everyone to have a stake in knocking down the barriers that still exist because we believe in accessibility for all. To learn more, you can go to pva.org/barriers still exist.
Protein plays a key role in maintaining overall health and is an essential nutrient for post-workout recovery and muscle repair. Registered dietitian Roxana Essani has more.
High-protein diets aren't just for athletes. Protein supports your immune system and helps you feel fuller for longer. Plant-based options offer a range of nutrients to support a healthy diet.
PB2 Performance is a plant-based protein made from real peanuts or almonds with no added sugar or artificial ingredients. Each serving delivers 20 grams of protein and can be blended, baked, or mixed into a variety of recipes.
One of my favorites is the PB2 Performance Peanut Protein with Dutch Cocoa. I blend it with dairy milk for even more protein, frozen banana and ice for a rich chocolate peanut butter flavor.
PB2 Performance is available in cocoa and peanut, and vanilla almond. To learn more and find recipes, visit pb2foods.com. That's pb2foods.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly, everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. There is talk perpetually bubbling at the United Nations and amongst international organizations that there should be some kind of supreme world body that can enforce climate change decisions upon the rest of the world, a climate court that would have arbitrarial power over the nations of the world to force them to take actions deemed favorable to controlling and regulating the Earth's climate. So far, the United States has been pretty shrewd about not getting dragged into anything binding, but the danger always exists, especially with elections on the horizon. Here with us to talk about it is Craig Rucker, co-founder and executive director at Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on.
I remember about 20 years ago, there was a Latin American strongman, one of the dictator president for life types down there. I forget which one it was. And he said he wanted to establish an international court of some sort to control the environment and control environmental crimes. And he himself could speak for the Earth. Because he had the unique power to know what the Earth wanted. This is just one of the oldest power grab dodges. It's one of the oldest principles of communism. They're going to decide that they are the high priests of the world and that they're going to force all the rest of us to go along with their climate diktats. And they've been pretty successful so far at imposing those diktats on us without an international climate court. How much worse is it going to get if they ever have one?
Oh, my goodness. It would be an incredibly bad thing. I think the gentleman, it could be, there are several people who have said it, but it all started with Maurice Strong. He was one of the ones that started the whole climate craziness back at the, this goes back to the Rio de Janeiro in 1992, where he was talking about and brought up the issue of climate change. They actually signed an agreement back then that later became the Kyoto Protocol and then later became the Paris Accord, echoing a lot of the sentiments of the early founder. And it's really been something that's been discussed in almost every conference of the parties. They call them COPs that meet every year. There's been about 30 of them that have taken place since the 90s. I've been to probably 27 of them. And this is always a topic of discussion. And it would be absolutely terrible. And the U.S. is wise to stay out of the processes. Clearly, for those who follow the climate change issue, pretty much everything would be against the United States on almost any given topic. And it would be very costly for us to, and it would impinge on our sovereignty as well by being involved in such a regimen.
One of the things that always happens at COPs is that the third world countries all show up and they demand climate action. And some of them talk about how climate change is wrecking their country this way or that. And then they say, but we're not going to do anything. This is entirely American, Europe's problem. You have to make all the sacrifices. Don't you dare ask us to stop burning coal or whatever we need to do to get our industries going. That's every COP since they started.
Yes. And in fact, starting in the not just the early years, but more vigorously after Copenhagen, which was in 2009, when that one is something called loss and damage that's routinely come up. Initially, people passed it as kind of a joke. But basically what that's saying is if a developing country gets hit with a typhoon or an earthquake or some natural disaster, what the advocates of climate change are saying is that that disaster was made worse by the emissions coming from the United States and Western Europe, Japan, and places like that. And so therefore, you know, if a hurricane hit and it's a Category 2 or Category 3, it might have only been a Category 2 except for the emissions coming from the United States. So the United States owes that country reparations for having caused that hurricane to be worse than it was. Now, you get an international court involved in this. They ask that, you know, they may listen to this junk because it's not scientifically valid. It's I think they threw science out the door for a long time at these COP meetings. And the U.S. would be supposedly on the hook to for reparations for pretty much every natural disaster that occurs around the world. It's ludicrous.
China is an interesting guest at these climate confabs because they're the worst polluters in the world by a long shot, and they're burning ever greater amounts of dirty coal, just literal mountains of coal, shoveled into their power plants. They're building more coal-fired power plants. They just did it again last year, and yet they're honored guests at these climate confabs, and one of the reasons is that they say something about how we're building all kinds of solar panels, and that's our contribution to saving the Earth, and everybody applauds, and the Chinese walk away with big smiles on their faces.
Yeah, and that's partially because of the fact China has always billed itself as kind of a developing country. There's a two-tier system in the whole climate negotiations. You have the developed versus the developing world. The developed world is expected to make huge sacrifices to chop their emissions, gut their energy sector of any fossil fuel plants or anything that the Greens would consider unsustainable. And meanwhile, the developing world, they're let off the hook. They can use coal, they can use natural gas, they can pretty much do what they want to, and the Paris Accord exempts them from that. Well, China, which is a world economic power, doesn't consider itself a world, you know, when it comes to these negotiations, therefore they're kind of exempt from everything that is going on at the UN. So from their perspective, economically speaking, it's in their national interest to make sure the West gets clobbered. And they're exempt, and therefore their heavy industries will move to China. So it's shrewd on their part. And, you know, I don't see any sentiment in the UN trying to redefine China as anything but a developing country that should have exemptions.
India would be another excellent case because they're a titanic polluter and consumer of fossil fuels. And I noticed that the Paris Climate Accords, which is not a binding treaty, the Paris Climate Accords are not a treaty. They're not legally binding. Nobody signed anything. It's just a conference that they had in a document that it produced. But they're constantly invoked as if they were a treaty. And you'll see harangues about how this or that country isn't meeting their Paris Climate Accord obligations. Well, India last year said, I guess we can't. Like, basically, we're not even going to pretend to meet the crazy requirements of the Paris Climate Accords anymore. We've got an industry to build. And I don't see a lot of criticism of India. You don't see them being portrayed as a global villain for just bowing out of the Paris Climate Accords.
You're correct on that. And I would, you know, they say the Paris Accord is non-binding, it's voluntary and all that sort of thing. But we've seen a history many times where the UN has gotten voluntary agreements signed on the basis of voluntary, and then they try to make them mandatory. It would be even made worse if there was a court that got involved in this. In fact, I think it was the International Court of Justice, which we're not part of. So they say all countries are obligated to keep the Paris Accord, even though they're beyond, you know, in signing of it. So if courts get involved, they could make a non-binding treaty binding if it needs to go that route.
I remember that. I remember how the International Court of Justice was considered a threat to sovereignty for that very reason. Craig Rucker, co-founder and executive director at Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, deputy national security editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Thanks very much for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.